From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, a Thursday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Josh Briscoe and Drake heading up until 2 o'clock. The next 4 hours, we've got you. A lot of stuff to get into and talk about today. You can be a part of the show. 913-912-4810 is the text line. 913-912-4810, the text line. Here's how the show lines up. We'll talk with Craig Stout coming up at 11 o'clock. KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast, Kent Swanson in Hawaii, apparently. So somebody else who part of the show just decides to jet setting and leave the continental United States. So that's
proud of
cool.
You, Kent.
Yeah, good for you, Kent. Couldn't have done it last week or next week. Had to do it on the specific week that you are scheduled to come on the show. But luckily, Craig Stout, fantastic pinch hitter. I don't care. But Kent, I'm going to talk to Craig anyway. It's just don't tell Kent that. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I will tell Kent that. I don't even care.
Oh, yeah. Who does care? I don't know. Craig Stout will join us at 11 o'clock. We will hear from the Kansas City Chiefs today at 1 o'clock. The Chiefs press conferences with OTAs. Phase 3 going on with the voluntary OTAs next week. 13th through the 15th will be the mandatory minicamp. So we'll hear from Andy Reid and others. We'll see. Last week, Andy Reid was scheduled, but we did not hear from Andy Reid. But we did hear from Andy Reid this week, at the White House. Doggone it.
Kind of a downgrade at the podium, you think?
Doggone it.
Presidential seal to Chiefs media room?
No, not at all. Not at all, depending on what you find to be diplomatic and presidential.
Got a big chief seal on the front, I guess.
That's exactly right. That's super, when's the last time a Super Bowl was played by a member of the White House? Huh? So, president ever won the Super Bowl?
I don't think so.
While being a sitting president? No. No.
Probably not.
You know who won the Super Bowl that was in the White House on Monday? The Chiefs.
I'm sure some of them ended up with rings. I'll give it some thought.
Yeah. Wedding rings, probably.
Let's draft presidents purely on their athletic ability while they were in office.
Were you drafting for basketball or football? Because basketball, I got Abe Lincoln.
Ooh, the height.
First pick.
My left guard, William Howard Taft. Thank you. Done. He might have quick feet. You could put him at tackle.
You'd have to know a whole lot more about the presidents than I do to be able to be a part of this game and a draft. I am going to abstain here. I'll sit this one out and let others weigh in, and I'll just take their word for it.
Injury issues for William Henry Harrison. Availability is an important ability.
That much I would know.
I don't think he's going to be available for very long.
It's one of those, oh, man, what could have been without the injuries?
The injuries, man, it's just
without the whole death thing. But it was a hell of a 3 months.
I mean, incredible. The peak of WHH, as I call him.
Yes. Tex says, Teddy Roosevelt, inside linebacker.
I think, that's a good call there. Thumper.
All right, so
cerebral. Good in space.
Is that right?
We'll conquer some land.
Again, taking your word for it. 913-912-4810 is the text line to join us. Again, we'll hear from the Kansas City Chiefs, Andy Reid, and others coming up at 1 o'clock. Tonight at 7 o'clock, it's the Stanley Cup Finals, Game 3, Panthers and Golden Knights. Another big Game 3 in South Florida. Knights up 2-0. And we'll see if the Panthers can try to get back in the series and take care of their home ice. That comes up at 7 o'clock after a best of at 6 o'clock tonight on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Royals off. They head to Baltimore for a 3-game set. Luckily, the Baltimore Orioles suck just like the Royals do. Same success trajectory and path. No, they're very good. And Daniel Lynch will be on the mound tomorrow night. That's an Apple TV game. Oh, okay. So, local fans can watch now.
Yeah. Hey, I'd like FDR as a wide receiver. Great wheels.
See, I mean, here's the thing.
Bah, bah, bah.
I was going to go with something along those lines, but I decided not to.
Oh, really? Okay.
For those specific reasons.
That's good. I'm keeping them lighthearted still. We're not getting into really any hot water here, I don't think.
I was going to put him as a running back, though. I wasn't going to put him. It wasn't really the wheels. It was
hard to bring down, too, for sure.
Runs over people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or rolls over people. Again, It's ridiculous, dude. 913-912-4810. I apologize on Josh's behalf. He goes over to other countries, and he feels like he can come back here and just make fun of Americans.
He's the only president to three-peat. I mean, he's a winner.
That's a great point.
Boom.
It's a good point. All right, let's get into the show. The Denver Nuggets may three-peat. They'll have to win their first one to be able to three-peat. They
did
are up.
I'm sorry to cut you off immediately.
Oh, no,
did you see the bottom third on First Take right as we were walking in?
No, I did not.
Are the Nuggets the new Warriors? Can we get one down first, guys? Just one?
Well, they are halfway to their first title.
Right. What are we doing?
I mean, we really like... Well, I am looking... If they're the new Warriors, I'm looking forward to people falling in love with the Nuggets and then in 2 years hating the Nuggets.
Yeah, that will happen. Success will do that.
Yes. Tech said Gerald Ford, starting center for the University of Michigan. So there you go.
I thought there was at least a couple of college football players that ended up being president.
That could be totally wrong. I just read texts and put them out there, and people take them as fact. And if it's something like that, I'll take it as fact. That's fine. I believe this particular texter. Seems like an incredibly smart individual.
Even better, by the way, center, linebacker, and long snapper for the school's football team in Michigan.
There you go. How about that? He didn't have to have a specific long snapper to go along with. If you snap the ball, snap the ball. Can you snap it long and short? Yeah, you can do both of those things. All right, so let's get into the show. We'll talk some Chiefs today. There's a number of things I want to get into with the Kansas City Chiefs today. I think, oddly enough, there's a lot of meat on the bone and topics to talk about with the Chiefs today in different news nationally. That may, by 1 or 2 degrees separation of Kevin Bacon, that would involve the Chiefs, not Dalvin Cook, who was released by the Minnesota Vikings. The degrees of separation that would involve the Chiefs is the expectation he's going to be a Miami Dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chiefs will then fly to Germany to face off against them. So the expectation is that the Chiefs will face off against Dalvin Cook this year. They were going to. And now it looks like they probably are going to. We'll see. But some other things across the NFL with DeAndre Hopkins, Danielle Hunter from the Minnesota Vikings, that apparently teams are calling Minnesota Vikings about trading for him. They are taking phone calls and listening. They can't get a contract extension done with him right now. Doesn't necessarily mean the Chiefs would be one of the teams that would call, but we know the Chiefs are interested in defensive ends. What would it take to sign him to a long-term extension? Because if you're trading for him, you would have to do that. What would it take to trade for him? A little more difficult now that the draft is already over. Would it take a first-rounder? Would the Chiefs be interested in doing that? If they're already going to be talking about extending Chris Jones to a massive contract, do you want to then do that with a defensive end when you just drafted FAU? You've got Karlaftis. You just signed Aminihu. Are you in the market for a Hunter? Or would you have been in the market a couple of months ago if they were offering him as a trade, considering the Chiefs did go defensive end in the first round? So that's at least a conversation going on across the NFL with one of the best defensive end edge rushers, younger edge rushers that may be available via trade. And typically those guys aren't available very often. I mean, they are available sometimes in free agency, sometimes via trade, but not as often as you would think, and so that name is out there. But let's get into the NBA. Game 3, the Nuggets get the win, and some historic numbers last night. I mean, all-time historic numbers. Nikola Jokic with the 32-21-10 triple-double, just the third 30-point, 20-rebound triple-double, going along with 10 assists. The third one ever in the NBA playoffs. The first one in the NBA finals, because Wilt and Kareem did that in just the playoffs, not in the NBA finals, because clearly they're not that good. But Nikola Jokic with that. And Jokic and Jamal Murray became the first pair of teammates to have a 30-point triple-double in a game ever.
In the finals, you mean, right? In the playoffs. Look.
No. Uh-uh.
Gotta be. You mean just in game 3?
Any game, any time, ever.
Ever.
Teammates to have 30-point triple-doubles, and they did that not only in the NBA Finals, not only on the road, but also in a Game 3 with the series tied 1-1. I mean, you're talking about decisive Game 3s, Game 5s, Game 7s when series are tied. It's as big of a moment to come through and play that way with one of the, if not the most underrated duo in the NBA that's probably starting to get their shine because of what they're doing in the playoffs and what Jamal Murray is doing now that he's healthy. Jamal Murray was amazing in the bubble, and then he battled injuries and an ACL, and now healthy in the playoffs again, doing what he did in the bubble. Jokic just getting better and better and better every year. And maybe locally that's shadowed.
It is.
By Christian Brown.
It really is.
And the game he had last night. It was unbelievable to watch a game where Murray and Jokic did something that has never been done before in the history of the NBA. In regular season, preseason, playoffs, NBA finals, doesn't matter. And the storyline being Christian Brown. That is, it's a couple things. One, I think we've become pretty numb to some historic numbers.
Yes, especially from Jokic.
Right.
It's just kind of normal for him.
And like crazy numbers in the NBA Finals and triple-doubles because, you know, LeBron did that all the time. And so it sort of became like, oh, okay, yeah, he has, all right, 25, 15, and 12. Okay, whatever. It's a triple-double. So we've seen like points and things like that. And Jamal Murray was phenomenal last night too. But it's the unexpected that happens in these games that gets a lot of the shine. And when you play the way that Christian Brown did, he didn't just hit a couple of big threes. He didn't hit a three. But he was 7 of 8 from the field, 15 points, 4 rebounds, had the steal and the breakaway dunk. He was everywhere on the floor and playing defense, and a guy that got 19 minutes last night. And I think it is directly connected to the way that, and I, this has nothing to do, it doesn't matter where they went to school, I promise you. It matters, we're talking about Christian Brown because where he's from and where he went to school, but being from Kansas City and then going to KU. But the other player I'm going to mention doesn't matter where he went to school. To me, it's directly connected to the inability of Malone trusting Michael Porter Jr. That Christian Brown got out there and took advantage of his minutes. I don't care where Michael Porter Jr. would have gone to school, okay, whether it's, you know, UW, where he was originally committed to, or whatever. He was a lottery pick, and in game one, he was a big story. But in game two, he disappeared. He was called out by his coach. And in game three, after being called out by his coach and disappearing, he was just sort of didn't look like he wanted to be out there.
Yeah.
It looked like he wanted to find the bench. Like every single whistle, he kept looking over to the bench. Because I think he knew how he was playing, and he missed a couple of defensive assignments and rotations where I think it was Max Strus hit a big three, and Michael Porter Jr. was supposed to rotate off of, gosh, I don't even know who was down in the corner, because KCP went and helped out at the top of the key. So Michael Porter Jr. was supposed to rotate. Instead, he stayed down near Jokic and was sort of pointing at his guy in the corner while Max Strus caught the ball as if like letting people know, well, I'm worried about this guy over here. And Strus buries the three, and KCP looks over at Michael Porter Jr. like, hey, it's a rotation, man. You got to come up here. The most dangerous person is the one with the ball and nobody guarding him. He's not going to swing it down to the corner where you're at. Because he didn't have to, and he's a better three-point shooter than the guy in the corner. So you had that. You had some shots that just weren't even close. He did make the bucket early in the game where it looked like, all right, you know, he got that to go, and maybe that was going to get him going. But it just didn't really look like he wanted to be out there. And Michael Malone put in Christian Brown, and Christian Brown took advantage of that, and he was everywhere. He was busting his butt. He was defending. He was on the floor. He was grabbing rebounds. He's sprinting up and down the floor. He's doing the things that you would expect a player that just simply finds ways to get things done. And, you know, the whole adage of, you know, he's a winner. But those are things that are done by teams that win, by players on teams that win, are the things that Christian Brown did. It's phenomenal, Josh, that 30-point triple-doubles by a teammate And it's like, yeah, but what about Christian Brown and his 19 minutes of play?
It's the funniest way to possibly look at that game last night. I was thinking the same thing, is that we are seeing this historic thing, especially from Jokic with the 30 and 20. And then you do see Jamal Murray, this healthy version of him that really does look like he was not overinflated by the, oh, just wait till he's healthy, right? That's a tough spot to be in, not just in terms of your expectations. And there was a story about him, you know, talking to Mike Malone about being damaged goods and if they even wanted him around anymore. There is a lot, and also I just for years listened to Rudy tell me about how good Jamal Murray was or was going to be or whatever, and the injuries continuing to undercut that.
Mm-hmm.
Physically and mentally, it's hard to come back and then to ultimately prove all of that hope right, and he's done that throughout these playoffs. He was stupendous. Jokic is literally rewriting record books.
Yeah.
But it's at least here a little bit. And I think to some extent, for even like Nuggets fans who have seen Jokic and Murray be exceptional, the idea of this being the Christian Brown game is hilarious and not that silly. Because especially when you talk about sort of that intangible winner, finds a way to win, toughness, no fear, big moments, all of that, that's always very hard to measure, right? Because it's always a little bit subjective. But who is the guy in this series who actually brought that byline with him, who has been that guy, not just in these playoffs, but also back in the bubble? Jimmy Butler is, well, he's just the guy who's going to make something happen in the playoffs and big games and whatever. And when Christian Brown made that shot through Jimmy Butler's chest,
yeah,
you go, all right, okay, like whatever that gene is, and I can't remember, I heard this clip. I think it might have been Richard Jefferson talking about the finals and not wanting the shot in the corner for the Heat and just sort of watching everything else. Or not for the, yeah, it would have been for the Heat at the time. Whatever it was. But like this idea that you have a lot of professional players who have put up a lot of shots in practice and a lot of shots in big games, and some of them do sort of metabolize that stress differently. It can be corny. I understand. But if you are Christian Brown in that moment, you're an hour and a half removed from playing college ball, which you didn't play for a terribly long time. How old is Christian Brown at this point? I should probably
play 4 years, though. Or at least he was in college for that long.
He's 22. He's 22. I thought he might have still been just barely of drinking age. But you have seen him at that highest level for a relatively small peak of that, right? And then Jimmy Butler is the guy between you and that bucket, and there's no fear, no hesitation whatsoever. It's just a tremendous moment of like, yep, I'm here and I belong here on this stage. It's really, really cool.
Let's hear from Christian Brown post game on the court after the game was over. They talked with Jokic. They talked with Jamal Murray. SVP had Aaron Gordon on, and every single person that they talked to got asked about Christian Brown. Well, let's actually hear from Christian Brown post game on the court after his big night.
Christian, you all were very unhappy with the way that game two went, but more than that, the way you guys played in that game two. How did you get right to get this win, particularly in the second half?
I mean, just take it possession by possession. Obviously, made a lot of mistakes last game. I think we minimized our mistakes this game. Didn't close it how we wanted to close it, but a win's a win.
Nikola Jokic, a 30-20-10 triple-double. Jamal Murray, a triple-double tonight. What's it like playing with those two and watching their greatness?
I mean, they make me look a lot better, obviously. So just getting to share the court with them, just all the guys. Obviously, that's who they are, and that's what we expect from them. So it's nothing different than it's been, you know, all year. Just to see them do that on this stage is obviously great.
For you, you've talked all season long about how this team lets you be you. What version of you did we see tonight?
I mean, like I said, that was just, you know, cutting, making plays off the other guys. Like I said, you know, the credit goes to Nikola and Jamal for getting me open and just let me be me. And that's what I appreciate about this team. And we're two wins away for what our goal was. And we haven't done anything yet. We're almost there.
How good did it feel to get that steal and then finish it with a dunk in transition and yell at the Heat fans a little bit?
I mean, it felt great. Like I said, those are the plays I like to make. It's good to yell and show my personality a little bit. Obviously, what I love to do. So, like I said, we haven't done anything yet. That's a win we really needed. And just to win it in the way we did, winning on defense, obviously feels great.
Big win, CB. Congrats.
Yes, man. Thank you.
So there you go. Big game for Christian Brown. Big game for the Denver Nuggets. They get the win. They are up 2-1. Miami Heat shoot just over 30% in that game from behind the arc. So they've shot 30% in two games. They lost. They shot 48% in one game. They won. As I talked about, if they shoot what they did against the Bucks and the Celtics, they'll win the series. If they don't, they'll lose, and they are not right now. So they're going to have to do that in three of the next four games if they want to win this series. But stranglehold on that for Denver, getting home court advantage back. They now have home court advantage again. The series started in game two because there was a team that won on the road, so that's good. Also, as we take a break, I do appreciate Jeff Van Gundy because he's the first person that I've heard nationally talk about something I've been harping on for a long time, and it was quickly dismissed by Mark Jackson. But I think it was Jokic that dropped a pass and KCP got fouled, and he said, why is it that if you throw the ball to somebody and they get fouled, shouldn't you get an assist if they knock down both free throws? And Mark Jackson, no, that's dumb. That's not how we've done it. And
I
then,
thought of you.
And then Jeff Van Gundy was like, well, we didn't have a three-point line. We didn't used to have a three-point line. And then Mark Jackson with the line of the night said, yeah, well, we used to only have two broadcasters. That was great. But Van Gundy, finally somebody saying what I have been harping on, that if you drop a dime to that guy and he gets a layup, you get an assist. But if you drop a dime to that guy and it's so good that the other guy has to foul him to keep him from scoring, you get nothing for that. You get nothing for that. But you did the same thing, only it's even better because that other team just got a team foul and a personal foul. But you get nothing.
I think Grant Guerin those runs either way.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Josh Briscoe, and Drake. We head up until 2 o'clock. We'll talk with Craig Stout, KC Sports Network, kcsn.substack.com. We'll talk with him coming up at 11 o'clock, and then we'll hear from the Chiefs coming up at 1 o'clock, 913-912-4810. A lot of presidential.
Oh, discussion. Excellent.
Yeah. Texas, Richard Nixon, point guard or pinch runner, guaranteed to lead the league in steals.
Pretty good.
Eisenhower's a linebacker. Eisenhower starting running back as well at West Point.
Eisenhower, I think I knew.
Taft got stuck in a bathtub. He was so big, so great offensive lineman.
Yeah, great size. Go. Weirdly, this is the second time William Howard Taft has come up in a radio discussion with me in the last 2 days. I talked about the Sterling yesterday. I don't know how he got there.
And there's some other mean ones I'm not going to read.
Sure.
There's some other ones that I'm not sure radio appropriate, so I'm just going to err on the side of caution with those. But I've read them, Texters. Just so you know, thumbs up. I laughed.
I think Woodrow Wilson, probably linebacker, just for the phrase, like, lay the wood.
Yeah,
I mean, boom, that right there.
Just lay the Wilson.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
That's good.
913-912-4810.
James A. Garfield would be good, but he would never play on Monday nights. He hates Mondays.
Yeah. Is that worse than mine? I
think. No. Yeah, absolutely. No, okay. You can't do worse, I don't think, than a Garfield joke.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Moving on.
So,
Millard, fill more gaps, am I right?
Next week, the Cincinnati Reds will be in town. That includes Ellie De La Cruz.
Hope you can keep your Calvin Coolidge.
Who I have been talking about for, I don't know, a couple months now, Drake? That we've been discussing Ellie De La Cruz. And what he's going to do at the big league club and watching and paying a little bit of attention to him. And, boy, the last month or so, we've talked a lot about him since he's been hitting home runs that are 115 miles an hour and doubles that are 116 miles an hour and et cetera, and running fast and throwing hard and doing all these toolsy things and being 6'5 and fun to watch and an exciting player. And already this year in his two games that he's played, he's got the fastest home to third time. Already in the triple that he hit last night, and he has the hardest hit baseball for the Reds this year in the home run that was the moonshot of 460 that was three rows away from going out of the park. John Sadak, the TV play-by-play, our man Tommy Thrall, the radio play-by-play of the Reds, who we're going to have on the show next week, when they're in town to talk about how lucky he is to get to watch what could be, next to Ohtani, the most exciting player in baseball. It's only two games in, and so that may seem like it's an exaggeration. But when you're talking about just simply exciting, it doesn't mean best player. Ohtani, that would mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. But Ohtani's the exciting and best player where you're just like, I don't know what you're going to see with this guy. So Ellie De La Cruz in his first at-bat yesterday, after going 2-for-4 with two walks in his debut, he steps up to the plate in game number two in the first inning with a man on. And, of course, he does this.
Tennis match, golf tournament silence.
Anticipation to see what...
Oh, goodness! That ball had a family! In game two, his first home run! A two-run bomb! The hardest hit ball by a Red this year. That was nearly 115... It brought everyone to their feet.
That ball had a family is a dynamite call. Is just a brilliant call. Also to know when he hit it that it wasn't just going to be a high fly ball that went to the warning track. Because if you say that ball had a family, that thing better go.
Which means you can't have that one preloaded. That's a reaction in the moment.
Yes, and... you know it's going to be that far because the bat speed, the power he generates for being as thin as he is. Like, he's not a bulking, huge Ortiz. Mo Vaughn looked like he was going to hit the ball 700 feet every time he swung and got a hold of it. And De La Cruz just simply turns. And it's not like sometimes you'll see, like, oh, he got his arms extended. He got his arms in, hips turned on the baseball, you know. I love when you see like the slow motion in that, you know, as a left-hander, so his left elbow is almost rubbing against his oblique, and just all that compacted power, even as long as his arms are, and just hits it 460 feet, and it's just absurd.
Have you paused it on which is where the ball was landing? This thing is barely a strike. Barely. It is up and in, and it is. It would have been a strike on the, you know, this little pitch tracks thing in real time.
Yeah, it depends.
But, and I think, I'm going to have to scroll back up here and check this other one, but I think that first hit that was another 112 miles per hour, let me just double check, not a strike, not even close. This thing, the catcher had to leave his crouch to come up after what was that first hit that went 112 off the bat. It is genuinely a bizarre thing to watch. The closest modern example is Aaron Judge bursting onto the scene and go, oh, that's a giant who can hit anything. But you're right, even with De La Cruz, it's he doesn't have that obvious bulk that Aaron Judge has. He seems like a math problem. It's impossible.
All that discussion yesterday about what it means to barrel a ball, I think he double barreled it.
he barreled it, he sweet spotted it. He hit it 115 off the bat. For Ellie De La Cruz, and that thing flew. It said it was 458. I don't know. I think they're shorting him like 50 feet.
It legit seems like it.
But also imagine if that didn't go as high, because that thing brought rain by the time it came down 460. Like, if he hits that just a little bit lower launch angle, I mean, it's in the river.
And it's just such an easy swing, despite, like you said, it being inside. His hands are in. It's smooth. And you don't even realize, I think, until he kind of falls into the plate with his back foot, you go, oh, that he must have swung that bat pretty hard. It's unbelievable.
And I like that, you know, there's a lot of fun being had in baseball today, whereas the next time he was up, he would have been hit in the back or the leg because of his immediately slamming the bat down, looking at the dugout, throwing up the 2-4s, because he wears number 44 for the Reds, which also, by the way, is pretty freaking brash.
Yeah.
To be a Reds player, a rookie, and say, I want Eric Davis's number. I want number 44. I want to wear that number as a Red who every year was going to be 30-30 and who, when he was up at the plate, you'd better watch because you didn't know what he was going to do. He was going to hit a home run, or he could hit a triple or a double, whatever it was. And De La Cruz is turning into that guy. And then when he's playing defense, you know he's got one of the strongest arms in baseball. And again, as we said, in back-to-back at-bats, first inning, he hit the ball hardest than any Red has hit the ball this year, and one of the hardest hits in all of baseball this year. And the second at-bat, he had the fastest home-to-third speed on the triple that he hit. Just back-to-back at-bats. That's the speed, that's the power, and the fact that in his first game, he drew two walks. In his first game, when they talked about the issue with him was him being a free swinger, him and the strike zone judgment, swing decisions, that's what he had to work on. And he starts out like one of 22 in AAA this year after coming back from a hamstring injury that, you know, kept him on the IL early. He gets healthy. He goes like one of 22 with tons of strikeouts. And it's like, until this guy figures out the strike zone and not striking out that much, he can't play. And then he just stopped. Well, not stopped striking out, but stopped striking out at the clip he was and was walking and was laying off pitches and had the discipline and the strike zone judgment. I heard Buster Olney this morning was talking about O'Neill Cruz, the 6'8 shortstop for the Pirates that made his debut last year, that everybody was like, this guy's unbelievable. You see how hard he's hitting the ball, how hard he's throwing the ball. The guy's 6'8 or whatever he is a shortstop. This is ridiculous. And the question, I think it was from Sherman or Garrett Dieter this morning to Buster Olney, he was like, so what's the difference? And because we saw another Cruz last year, O'Neill Cruz, Ellie, although it's De La Cruz, but another guy who's, you know, last part of the name is at least Cruz, not necessarily the last name, but O'Neill Cruz made his debut last year, and he's like, the difference is O'Neill Cruz strikes out a lot. He's a free swinger. He's got an on-base percentage before he got hurt this year of like 290, which under 300, which I don't know how you can be a young guy and have an under 300 on-base percentage and think you're going to be good. I joke, I kid, but he strikes out a lot. And Ellie De La Cruz, first at bat in the big leagues, laid off two breaking balls that were low and inside to a lefty and just took a walk, which is not something that you would typically see when you've got a guy probably amped up in his first at bat wanting to hit the ball 500 feet, and he does that. I can't wait to watch him next week out at Kauffman Stadium. And it's unfortunate that what gets me to Kauffman Stadium this year is my son being a part of the junior lineup on a Sunday and Ellie De La Cruz on a weeknight next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But such is reality right now of the Royals. And they probably don't care why you're going out to the park because now they're having Chiefs night.
Yeah.
Unlike what?
Travis
June 12th
Kelce
or something.
Throwing the first pitch.
Is he really?
He gets another shot at it. Yeah,
okay.
They just announced that today, I think. Not De La Cruz related, but did you see the walk-off by Will Benson in that same game for the Reds?
I did.
Probably the coldest immediate, like, not even bat throw, just the entire scene of the "This is my city," spike the bat. Yell. He was facing the dugout about 5 feet away from home when the ball was landing. He made a meal out of it, and it just, I got jealous, honestly. Because it just feels like the Royals are really far removed from having a moment as cool as any of the last 10 that the Reds have produced in the last few days. And, at least you get to go see a cool traveling show right now because Cincy seems like it's on fire.
I don't know if maybe that was like...
Not a pun about New York or anything, sorry.
I
thought, well, that wasn't a pun, but should I explicitly say it wasn't one? So, no, I appreciate the opportunity for me to just admit that words aren't really my good thing.
Yep. Will Benson with the walk-off. So, back-to-back walk-offs against the Dodgers for a Reds team now that is playing some really good baseball, really fun baseball, too, and some younger guys coming up. McLean, one of the top prospects. India is really good. And now Ellie De La Cruz, one of the more exciting players in baseball. I thought it was also cool that the Dodgers, Nick Robertson made his major league debut last night, and the first batter he went up against was Ellie De La Cruz, and he struck him out. Three pitches, bing, 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 strikeout. That was fun. You know, second game ever for Ellie De La Cruz, one of the more exciting prospects. Nick Robertson's making his debut for the Dodgers, and throws it right by De La Cruz three times. That was an interesting matchup. Yes, what I'm saying is I watched more Reds baseball last night than I did Royals.
Do you think when Cincy comes to Kansas City this time, they're going to try to call it like Hella Cruz Stadium?
Mm-mm.
Burrowhead's a lot smoother.
Yeah.
Jabroni behavior regardless. And also, would anyone care?
It's Ellie De La Crofman.
De La Crofman's pretty good.
De La Crofman Stadium. We see y'all at De La Crofman. Mike Hilton doesn't have the same ring.
No,
we see y'all at Burrowhead.
I I wouldn't want to have to defend it this time, though. I think De La Kaufman is what they should just call it for a little bit.
He hadn't even played here.
No.
All right. We'll take a timeout.
I don't have any other puns or any. Let me. You want to pick another president?
Yeah, there's probably some more texts about presidents somewhere along the line.
Can we rename Kaufman after a president? William Kaufman Stadium. There we go. Nailed it. This thing on?
Mm-hmm.
I might turn it off soon.
Let's see here.
Looking forward to Jordan Lyles versus Ellie De La Cruz.
Oh, boy.
I may show up to that game just, as the texter said, I may go to that game just because I'm there to watch Ellie De La Cruz. I may go to that game because that would be then Jordan Lyles would be going for 0-14.
Yeah. I mean, he's working on an entire. So. He's working on. He's coming after those Lions from 2008. All right.
Attack you, even the Orioles in the 80s and their 0-21-22 start. We'll take a timeout.
They can't Gerald afford that.
By the way, we're talking about Chiefs night out at Kauffman Stadium. And I didn't put two and two together in that it was, you know, June 12th that Chiefs night is taking place on Monday with a team from Cincinnati in town. The Royals do that on purpose, having the Chiefs while they're playing a team from Cincinnati to celebrate Chiefs night and the world champions. I don't know that Reds players will really give a bleep, but it would be kind of funny, you know, when all of the Cincinnati Reds fans are going to be watching that game and they're going to see the broadcast about Travis Kelce throwing out the first pitch. It's Chiefs night here at Kauffman Stadium, and they're facing off against the Reds.
Last day of OTAs, right? So that's why
it's the day before mandatory minicamp starting.
Oh, that's what.
So everybody will be back in town. The 13th would be the start of the mandatory minicamp. So it's mandatory.
And
so you do it June 12th, and it's the Red, and it's a team from Cincinnati.
The Royals release here says that Travis Kelce will be throwing out the first pitch, but it's going to be at a target of a dunk tank with the mayor of Cincinnati sitting in it, which is a really bizarre, very specific thing for them to put on, but it should be a great time.
I don't know that he would agree to that. Kelce would, but I don't know that the jabroni would agree to doing
that. He showed
that
up for the schedule release video. You know, he's not completely completely shied away, but yeah, that would be...
I don't think he would then fly to Kansas City to get dunked on.
You know what?
Tank.
Here's what I'll say. I'll do it. I'll put on a suit, maybe give me a little, like, just a pin that just says Mayor of Cincinnati. No one will know the difference.
You volunteer as tribute.
I do. That's exactly what I do here. I volunteer as the mayor of Cincinnati as tribute.
Mahomes, Kelce, and Andy Reid will be out there, plus more, and the first 20,000 fans get a rally towel that, quite frankly, is pretty sick.
Yeah, it's
I really like this towel. I want to go out there because I want to watch Ellie De La Cruz. Kind of fun that it's a Chiefs night. But that towel is pretty awesome. It's that's one of the more... one of the cooler gifts that I've seen as a giveaway. Corey would not consider that a towel because it's a giveaway, but still, I would want that.
Here's a question about it, though. The sponsor, I can't remember exactly what Corey's rules were, but the sponsor on that one, I think, is just kind of the Chiefs. Like I didn't see another logo of any sort.
At least on the graphic they released, there is no logo. It says, greetings from Kansas City. And the top half is blue, bottom half is red, and says home of the world's greatest fans. It's got Chiefs and Royals on the back. It's the same thing, sort of Chiefs on the top, Royals on the bottom. Top red, bottom blue. It's pretty cool, but I didn't see a logo.
So I think that to me is what it feels like, is that, you know, again, if there's a big sponsor logo on it, you can then begin to litigate. But I think this one's clear even by Corey standards.
No, it's a giveaway. It doesn't count. You cannot use that as a towel.
I do forget that if you just hand something to Corey, he will throw it on the ground and then spit at you. I do not even have the time to bend over and pick that up, which is strange because you just handed it to him.
You also forget that when we went out to Kauffman Stadium for, you know, a kind of an 8-10 night with all of us and we sat upstairs, Corey's daughter said, "Where are we going? I've never used the escalator at Kauffman Stadium before." So, yeah.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.